Okay, we're going to move on to our next company, and especially pharmaceutical portion of our presentation, certainly as companies with a lot going on. Antares is no exception. So we at Roth certainly welcome the management of Antares to the conference. The company applies its injectable and topical drug delivery technologies to proven compounds to create value-added products. Its key platforms are self-injection devices and topical gel-based formulations, which can improve convenience, comfort, ease of administration, patient compliance, and outcomes. In the injector area, the company has a multi-product deal with Teva that includes Tevtropin, which is a self-injection form of human growth hormone, and four other development stage products. Potential approvals for generic EpiPen and a generic form of Imitrex auto-injector under the Teva agreement could create significant shareholder value later this year, although I'm not sure if the company's disclosed the Imitrex asset yet, but that's what we think it is. The company's also developing a product called Vbex MTX. MTX stands for methotrexate. This is a self-injection formulation for use in rheumatoid arthritis, a big market. In the gel-based area, the company has partnered its novel oxybutynin gel, which was recently approved with Watson Pharmaceuticals, and Watson is a leader in the overactive bladder segment. So with that, as I said, there's a lot going on here, and I'm going to turn it over to Paul Watton, the company CEO, to give you more detail on the business. Paul?
Thanks very much, David. And thanks very much for inviting us to this conference. I'd like to tell you about the progress of Antares over the last 3 years. When I joined the company just over 3.5 years ago, we were a $30 million company, and we have really turned this thing around. We focused and developed a pipeline. And much like the last presenter, the story going forward for us is all about growth. And our lead asset in that growth mode is, in fact, the Vibex methotrexate program, which was referred to. And I'm going to talk a little bit about that, of course, as well as the process we use to identify pipeline projects. We just announced our earnings yesterday, and I'm pleased to say that we had another good year in 2011. We finished off the quarter with strong revenues of $5.5 million, which is a record for the company. And we've really built a stable platform now for this company to invest in good development projects. And our plan going forward is to forward integrate, so we're responsible for the commercialization of our own products as we grow. This is our lengthy safe harbor statement, which I'll let you all read for a second. So we're a fast-growing company, and we are the only U.S.-based company with auto-injector, pen, and needle-free technology platforms. The difference with us is that we are a pharmaceutical management team, and we focused on developing products around these platforms. And the reason this is important is because the market for us all in self-injection technology is going to grow quite rapidly. The biosimilars initiative, the number of small molecule drugs that can be given by self-injection at home is quite large, and our mission in life is simple. It's to make it as easy for someone to give themselves an injection at home as it is to take a tablet. And certainly that's the idea behind the methotrexate program. We've got good clinical and regulatory expertise, which is demonstrated. We got our first FDA approval with a self-sponsored program in December of last year. And I believe this gives us a competitive advantage in this field. I believe we're the only company with device technology that's performing this type of strategic plan. Our transdermal gel business has already yielded two FDA-approved products. We've got one in development. We've got an FDA approval on our product Antarol. Occurred last December. That's about to be rolled out by Watson, and we're waiting for the commercialization of that product fairly soon. Our self-injection business has already yielded one FDA-approved product, which is, in fact, human growth hormone, which uses our needle-free technology platform. That's continuing to grow both here and also in Europe. And I think that when you look at what we have as a company, we've got a very good opportunity to leverage this self-injection technology. When you do the math, you can see that the ROI for us in this space is better than any other drug delivery platform that I've been associated with in my career. And I think we have an opportunity now to really crank it up a bit and develop more products and commercialize our own products moving forward, as I mentioned earlier. So investment highlights. I think one way to look at Antares is that we are a growth story now, but on top of that, we're also a diversified story are what's known in the industry as risk mitigated. And we have multiple products already approved, and we're already a recognized leader in this self-administration technology. And we've done well with partnerships recently. We've diversified our partnership base. We signed deals last year with Watson, Daewoong, and Pfizer. We already have a collaboration with Teva, and we do have world-class partners in play right now. And I anticipate that we will do more partnerships going forward, particularly in the international area. One thing that's important here is that, as a company, the original technology platform around the injections technology was developed over 20 years ago. And if you talk to anybody who's looking at this device area, they will tell you that the intellectual property around this is a minefield to play in, and I think that we were one of the original people putting down the mine, so we actually have a very strong platform, I think, for the company. And we've continued to file IP both around the technology platforms as well as products in our pipeline. Cash position, as of the end of December, we had cash of $34.5 million, basically. We have no debt. You can see that the revenue growth has continued year on year since 2008 when this management team took over, and we're anticipating similar growth in 2012 at least. Our operating cash burn in 2011 was just $1.9 million versus $6 million the year before in 2010, and we're going to continue to manage this properly as a business and manage our cash burn. But that doesn't mean to say that we're not going to continue investing aggressively in our development programs, quite the reverse, in fact. Market capitalization slide is progression slide is shown here, just so a bit of growth there. But this is the important thing. This is the pipeline. And I think that it's going to be very difficult for anybody to find another company with a pipeline as diverse as this or as deep as this or even as advanced in this in a company which currently only has 35 employees. So we manage our company very tightly. We've got Tevtropin on the market already. I'll talk about that in a moment. Elestrin, which is a program for HRT in women, is already sold here in the US by Jazz. And in fact, the sales of that are picking up very nicely right now. Jazz acquired Azure, which is how they got that asset. Watson will be launching Anterol, which I believe they're going to call Jelnique 3% in the next few weeks. We got the NDA approval on that one in December. We have our own programs with Teva, the Vivex Epi program, which the ANDA has already been filed and is currently in litigation, and I won't be talking about that one today. We have the Teva program number two, which David believes is sumatriptan. And then we have our own program, Antares, developed 5XMTX, which is in clinical trials right now. We anticipate filing an NDA on that one in the next 12 months and getting that to the marketplace by 2014. We have another self-sponsored program, Vivex QS1, which currently the drug itself is in formulation development and preclinical studies. We will announce that drug as soon as we have the intellectual property wrapped up on that. I'm anticipating that's going to be towards the end of this year. Then we have two PEM programs at Teva. One is an ANDA of a large drug, which we're anticipating that they will file the ANDA at the back end of this year. And one is an NDA program, which is currently being fast-tracked over in Europe. And we anticipate that that product will also make it over here to the US. Both of those PEM programs, of course, are global programs. We have a program with the Population Council, Nestogel, which is a contraceptive gel. And this has completed phase two studies, about to go into phase three, and we're currently in talks with potential partners for that asset. And then we have an undisclosed product with Pfizer, which was a deal we did at the back end of last year, which was a product that had been in our inventory for some time, came with clinical data in a significant number of patients. Pfizer will be going to the FDA discussing this program with them, with a view to designing phase three clinical trials, and I anticipate that that product will probably launch, assuming they move those trials through expeditiously, in 2016. So from this pipeline, I think we can anticipate a product launch every year on average for the next 5 years, and we will continue to grow this pipeline with our own initiatives. The partnership we have with Teva is immensely important to us. The relationship we have with the company is very good. We go all the way up to the top and the bottom of the company and across the company. in terms of people we talk to. We've been able to use the experience we've gathered through working with Teva to work on our own methotrexate product for patients who need injectable methotrexate for the treatment of rheumatoid arthritis. And Teva has really been a key partner for us and will continue to be a key partner for us. We also think that one of the things we've learned through Teva is the real need out there in the marketplace today to optimize the cost of healthcare by affording patients efficient and effective delivery systems like the ones we have. So the portfolio we have disposable auto-injectors, which we call Vivex. These are auto-injectors that are intended for use on a relatively infrequent basis, like once a week. They're not intended for everyday use. The types of products you see in these are things like the EpiPen, which is one example, which is rarely used, actually, all the way through to the biologic products, which are injected every week. And this is the type of application where we're targeting with methotrexate. The pen injectors we have, they're multi-dose pens. They're typically seen in the marketplace with diabetes products like the GLPs. And we have a cartridge technology platform, which Teva actually employ as well, which can hold up to about 1 month's supply of a drug in there. And last, we have the reusable needle-free injectors, which are intended for multiple use for patients to self-inject every day subcutaneously. The key thing here is that they're all easy to use, and patients get a reproducible dose of a drug time after time. We manufacture all of our products here in the United States, and we shall continue to do so. With Teva, we have multiple agreements for diverse products, and as you may know, Teva is a fairly significant player out there, probably the largest injectable company in the world. The product we have with them on the market today is HGH. This is a growing franchise. When T-Jet was launched, which is our product, with Tevtropin, which is their drug, they were selling about $25 million worth of Tevtropin at the time. They've now trebled the sales level of Tevtropin. We have an opportunity there to monetize that success through a combination of device sales, royalty payments, and consumable sales, actually, for the needle-free product. So we have multiple revenue streams coming in from that. Significantly, actually, that same product is sold in Europe, where the gross sales level is also somewhere in the $75 to $80 million range. So between Europe and the U.S., we have about $150 million worth of end product sales using our technology now. I'm expecting that that will continue to grow. We have two Vivex products filed with the FDA, as I mentioned earlier, where we receive margin on device sales as well as mid to high single-digit percentage royalty on overall product sales. And we have the two pen injectors, which are global programs, the other two programs we have in development with Teva, U.S.-based programs. And in this case, we receive a transfer price and margin on device sales with royalties actually going to the mid-teens. Now, since these are both the biggest products we have in this portfolio with Teva, getting a higher royalty makes a lot more sense for us, and it's a lot more commercially attractive than a lower royalty percentage, obviously. But those two products together in the U.S. Account for about $1.5 billion worth in current sales. Some people may argue with me that the HGH market is not a good market for describing future biosimilar dynamics, but I believe that there's some elements of it which apply here. And I think we're ahead of the curve when it comes to working with companies or even by ourselves now to identifying how to unlock that value. Essentially, if you're spending a lot of money on a clinical trial, you have to be able to differentiate your product. This is not a generic market where you're substitutable at the pharmacy. You need to be able to sell it as a brand. And as I mentioned earlier, the launch of Tevtropin as a needle and syringe was limited in its success because patients were being lost to the fact that the compliance issue amongst patients, particularly amongst patients paying $25,000 to $30,000 a year for a drug, was poor without a good device, and that's where we came in. And as I mentioned earlier, Teva's market share has grown threefold in about 2 years. Provides product differentiation, and as I mentioned earlier, it doesn't allow for the managed care payers to add it to their formularies. Teva have had tremendous success actually transferring patients across into this product recently. In Europe, the product is still growing. It's been on the market there for 6 years. But the market share it's got over there is about 12%, and the product is growing even after 6 years, 10% year on year. This is the way we identify our programs in development, and you can see that the methotrexate product is the first one down there. We screened over 200 compounds when we came to methotrexate. Product 2 is the QS1 product I mentioned that's just gone into development. And we have two other products, 3 and 4, which are currently in the process of doing the primary market research on, with a view to entering those into the development cycle in the next year or so. Methotrexate, this product came about through good market research. If we actually look at what's happening out there today, there are increased usage reports of methotrexate injectable versus oral methotrexate. The prescription number is climbing. A few years ago, the prescriptions for injectable methotrexate were about 5%. Today, they're closer to 9%. Most of this is going into the rheumatology space. And the reason that injections are gaining popularity is because they give you reproducible absorption. And currently, the only approved route of administration is intramuscular. Physicians would like to see more usage of injectable methotrexate. And the way they're going to be able to do this is to enable patients to self-inject at home, and that's what we're providing here. So we'll be the first company out there with an auto-injector with a subcutaneous route of administration for methotrexate. We file patents around this, and we believe, as I said earlier, that the patent estate around all of our technology platforms is very strong. It's very easy to give. The injection itself, the whole process actually only takes 3 seconds from the time you start the injection to when you take the device off the skin, which can be either injected on the abdomen or on your thigh. But the actual injection itself goes into the system in less than half a second. So we've actually taken this to the FDA. We've agreed a pathway forward with them for filing an NDA. It's an execution pathway. We are doing a combination of user studies and usability studies. We are developing numerous strengths of this product with 2.5 milligram increments to enable the dosing to be titrated. And all of the work that we've done with rheumatologists, and I was at the ACR meeting last year, has shown that this product will be appreciated by rheumatologists. They already understand that patients need to be able to give injectable methotrexate more frequently. And it's fair to say that they really do embrace this product. Flip through that. The other thing I would say is that all of the work that's being done on injectable methotrexate is backed up by a lot of literature data. In Europe, subcutaneous methotrexate is used quite effectively. It's an approved route of administration over there, but it's something where you can see from this slide here that there's a lot of clinical data showing that, for example, subcutaneous methotrexate is better in terms of efficacy than oral methotrexate without the higher rate of adverse events. There's also other studies out there which have done pharmacoeconomic evaluations in terms of the cost and efficacy of starting patients on it. And there's some feeling that maybe one thing that might come out of this is an option for physicians to optimize the use of methotrexate as a therapy, which could potentially delay the need to use a biologic in treatment of rheumatoid arthritis, which is good from a therapeutic point of view for the patient, as well as obviously from a cost point of view. I think one of the other things I would say is that the novel self-injection technology we have is going to be vital in the future to biological and biosimilar commercial success. As I mentioned earlier from the HGH slide, you can see how commercial differentiation is key. If you're spending sort of $30, $40, $50 million on a clinical study, you want to make sure that you'd be able to leverage that in a market which could be quite competitive. In the case of HGH, there's already 6 or 7 players out there with human growth hormone. They're all big names like Pfizer and Genentech, and Teva went into it with our device behind it, and they've already been able to garner a good market share as a result. What we are able to do is enable patients to self-inject at home, safely and effectively, and the Vivex QS device, which is shown on this here, is actually a product that was designed to be used with biosimilar products, It's got a 1 mil capacity. Most biologics are given about 0.8 mil dose. I don't know why 0.8 mil is the number chosen, but it was important for us to be able to give a higher volume with the Vivex technology platform. And this one actually uses a novel method of actually delivering the drug out of the syringe from the propulsion mechanism used. We filed IP around this one, but this is actually the device behind our second pipeline product, which is called the QS1, which I talked about earlier. Needless to say, I'm just flipping through the slides here in the interest of time, but the biosimilars targets that exist there's quite a lot of them that exceed $1 billion in sales each. And I think as the situation with the FDA evolves and people know exactly what they're dealing with in terms of an approval pathway, we will start to see more and more participation of companies like Antares in this space. One thing that we did learn from all of our work we've done in terms of market research or working with Teva, for example, is it's very important to integrate the use of this type of device technology earlier rather than later in the development program. Talk quickly about the transdermal gel portfolio. There's three products already in development here on the market. Anterol, which Watson will be renaming under the Gelneat franchise, Elestrin and Nestrogel. The oxybutynin product will be launched within the next month or two. And it's a once-daily transdermal treatment for overactive bladder. It dries very quickly. We actually got approved a day before the PDUFA date. We've already licensed it to South Korea. There's at least 16 to 18 other territories where an FDA-approved product can be taken and filed with regulatory agencies without the need to do any additional work. And part of our business development efforts will be to hit some of those singles going forward in terms of international licenses. And it's a strategic acquisition for Watson. It extends, protects, and expands their overactive bladder portfolio. And we have good intellectual property protection around the technology itself that's used to deliver the drug across the skin. It comes in a pump. The current Gelneat product is available as a sachet. And all of the work we've done has shown that the pump will, in fact, be very well received by patients. So we're expecting Watson to be able to grow their franchise with the launch of this new version of oxybutynin. It's a large market. Most of the prescriptions here are for anticholinergic agents, where the side effects include dry mouth and constipation. And when you give this drug, oxybutynin, orally, it does have the same type of side effects as you see with all anticholinergics, which is dry mouth. But when you give it transdermally, you remove the side effects profile. And that's really where the opportunity lies, because you don't lose any of the efficacy. Elestrin is the other drug, HRT product, which is partnered with Jazz, who acquired Azur recently. That product, the prescription, is actually starting to pick up and growing, which we're really pleased about. This is natural estradiol in a gel, and we also see that this is important for the next product as well, because it's the same technology platform that's behind Nestrogel, which is a contraceptive product which has already been through phase two studies, conducted by the Population Council. This is a combination of probably the best agent for contraception, which is Nestrone, which isn't orally active, with the best delivery technology, which is our gel. And the amount of gel you need is very small. It's about a pea-sized gel amount you use every day for effective coverage. This is actually quite interesting, because there is a compliance issue in oral contraception. Almost a third of women actually discontinue the use of oral contraceptives after 6 months, and that goes up to about 44% within 12 months. And Population Council actually did a study interviewing people, and 19 out of 20 women would actually prefer to use a gel than to take a tablet. So we think there is an opportunity there. We are seeking a development and commercialization partner. We are in discussions with potential partners as we speak. Milestones in the next 12 to 18 months. First is we'll see the Anterol product launched by Watson under the Gelneat name, Vivex Epi, which is currently under litigation, and Vivex 2, which David mentioned earlier, should be approved and launched. Other Teva programs will advance, including our first ANDA. The NDA for Vivex MTX will be filed. We'll find a partner for that program, certainly in Europe, And we've already initiated the new QS pipeline product, but what we will in fact do by the end of the year is unveil that product. I think potentially it's a bigger market opportunity for us than methotrexate. So the challenge for us as a company now is growth, and growth implies to me that we should be forward integrating, taking charge of our own commercialization efforts, or seeking partners that allow us to be an equal partner in those commercialization efforts. We're no longer going to be in the licensing and royalty business, and I think with the pipeline we have and the mechanism we have of activating that pipeline, identifying good products, churning them out really quickly with a high return on investment being the target here. But it's all about executing quickly and effectively, and that's what we've done in the past 3 years, and I expect we're going to continue to do that in the future. So thanks for listening. I've run out of time. I'm sure David's got a question there. Thanks.
Well, first I'm going to open up to the audience if there's any questions from you guys. Anyone? So I will start. So generic EpiPen or epinephrine, that could be a huge driver of economics for you guys. Can you talk about the update on the timeline? When is it possible for Teva to get approval and launch that product?
as I said on the conference call yesterday, nice try, and I can't really comment, but how do I put this gracefully? There was a court hearing last week. It's the trial's going on, and what I'm told is the judge will have some 6 to 12 months to make his decision on the potential infringement that is alleged by King/Pfizer. I'm pretty confident that our technology itself doesn't infringe anybody else's patents, but the judge has to decide. And we shall wait for his decision, and that's about as much as I can really say.
So the hearings have completed, and now it's just a matter of the judge to decide whether or not Teva, with your technology, infringes.
Essentially, yes, yeah. And those court transcripts, by the way, for anyone interested, are available. You can access them, because I've seen them on our various sites that follow us.
In terms of the second proprietary product using the VVEX technology, VVEX QS, when could you guys announce the identity of that product, and what would be the trigger for you guys coming out and letting us know what it is?
Well, it's a good question. The product itself is currently in formulation work at the moment. We're going to be formulating it into a pre-filled syringe, which will then pop into the auto-injector, and we will be doing preclinical work in animal models between now and the summer. And as soon as we've got the intellectual property position established, which we will by late summer, I would imagine, and we'll probably announce that once we file a patent, I'm thinking towards November, December of this year specifically. And that's when we'll tell people. We followed the same pathway with methotrexate. I'm glad we did, because we were able to file patents around that one, which are going to make it very difficult for somebody else to become a copyist.
Excellent. Any other questions from the audience? Well, certainly we appreciate your presentation here, Paul, and going from $25 million to $250 million in market cap over a few short years, great job.
Thanks very much.